Hey, today on Shift and Stare, we've got so much good stuff to talk about. We talk about Goodwood. We talk about 935s racing up in Monterey. We talk about fish heads in cars. Talk about IMSA Monzas, Ford Explorers. We talk about Aaron's Isettas. And what he did and did not find in the cars, like floorboards and Pepsi cans.
Soda cans. Yeah, all kinds of stuff.
But it's all this week on Shift and Stare. But before we get started, let me tell you about Geico. Everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket. It just may be the most rewarding to-do you do today. Hey, let's get this show rolling. Shift and Stare.
Let's do it.
Steer, racing, rides, people, and places. With your hosts, Brad Vanshore, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey, well, let's get this show rolling. Shift and Steer, it's another episode. And you know what, guys? As we're recording this, it's the first day of summer.
Is it?
It is.
It's the first day of summer today.
Can't you just look outside and see that it's the first day of summer? It's like beach weather.
I thought it was going to rain like a little bit on the way here.
I know. What is with this weather, man? It's not Southern California weather, but the weather seems to suck pretty much everywhere right now.
Does it suck over at Goodwood? Because the Festival of Speed's coming up soon.
I know it is.
Did you read anything about that?
I haven't. I haven't looked at anything about Goodwood this year.
So the Festival of Speed, there's a celebration, I believe, of Bentley, because Bentley's celebrating 100 years.
Okay.
You were probably there for the first one. And then
no, but my ancestors were.
Now that unfortunately the Pete's not here, you're the next in the line.
Yeah, exactly.
You're the
next. I mean, here I am in my 30s, and you're making fun of me like I'm the old man.
100 years of Bentley. By the way, Bentley's going to be the featured brand or mark at Pebble Beach this year as well. So expect a bunch of old British cars.
A bunch of old cars that don't look like Bentleys.
Yeah, and we're going to walk to the very end of the line and look for the cool stuff.
Yeah, and the Bentley boys will be there.
I'm sure. The Bentley boys. So Bentley is a feature thing, but the thing that came out in the news today as we're recording this is Ford is debuting a Ford GT.
Bentley version?
No.
It's
weird because I don't want to get the wording wrong. All they said was ultra high performance. So they're going to do a pumped up version of a Ford GT.
Good, because the other one wasn't worth anything.
And I don't know if this is something they're selling or they're just doing like a one-off vehicle to promote the brand.
How many horsepower in the regular one?
More than seven.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to say like, 892? Some weird figure like that?
I don't know. Let's see. Ford GT, if I had to.
And so, you know, they could do 1,000 horsepower version and it'd be a pumped up version.
Yeah, I think
be it's pumped up, man.
But it's going to be like a specialty car that nobody can buy because it seems a little weird. Like, wasn't the exclusivity like a really big deal?
Yes, it was
2,000
a big
cars,
deal.
500 a year for 4 years. The Ford GT is 647 horsepower and
oh wow, we're way off. Yeah,
550 feet of torque.
But God, the new Mustang's got more than that thing.
I know it does. It
really yeah,
does.
What's up with that?
Yeah, it's heavier, isn't it?
It is, but it's funny because already there's people out there going, "Hey, the new Mustang." So you have a 647 horsepower V6.
Yes.
And a 760 horsepower V8 supercharged. Everyone's like, imagine if the Ford GT had this
exactly.
engine.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's bigger, it's heavier, but it's probably louder and and a little crazier, but the Ford GT 0-60 in 3 seconds. So I don't know what they mean by ultra-high performance. But
well, that one's just high performance.
Okay,
so they're going ultra-high performance.
Would you prefer that it was like a one-off halo car that they used for promotion, or they're going to say, we're going to make 10 of these, and 10 people will get on the list?
I'd like it if they said they were going to make 50 of them. Mm-hmm. And 50 people get on the list, and you had to be a previous owner, just like Ferrari does.
Yeah.
But you have to own one of the other ones, and then you can buy it.
Yeah. Can you trade in your 2019 Ford GT for an ultra high performance?
And they call you on the phone, and they go, hey, Aaron, you've got that car. This, by the way, Bob over at Ford. Yeah, Bob. Yeah, you're on the list. Would you like to buy? Well, I don't know. Well, that was your chance. Click next. Tom, would you like to buy? And they just get the guy who he goes, yeah, I want one. And then they go, okay, by the way, it's $1,900,000.
That's funny because I basically had that conversation with Ken Lingenfelter a while back when he got his LaFerrari.
Yeah, because that's how they did it.
And he was excited. He's like, oh, I got the call from Ferrari, and I've been accepted to give them $1.5 million
exactly.
to get a LaFerrari. I was like, that's a weird
how
call
lucky.
To get. Like, how are you, like, you're happy, but also, like, not. Like, shouldn't you be, like, a little bit, like
hey, Matt,
congratulations.
Can you hold on a second?
Money.
I have a call coming in from Ferrari. Yeah, it comes back. Oh, yeah. That was Ferrari. I was on the list. I just spent $1,000,005.
Just spent $1,000,005. Thank you. Move on.
Yep.
The convertible version, the Aperta. Aperta?
What's that?
What's the convertible LaFerrari? The Aperta? Aperta? Yeah.
Aperta.
He was on the list for that, too. He passed.
But he didn't get one?
He didn't get
one. Didn't want the drop top?
No, but I was like, it's free money.
Yeah.
And he's like,
no kidding.
Is. Yeah, because they were like $2 or $2.5 million. Now they're like $7 million.
I was going to say, he could have just like, bam, and bought a bunch more cars for his collection.
Yeah. You know, speaking of his collection, he has a Vector.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got not one of the
early
V8 Vectors. He's got the end of the line Diablo V12 Vectors.
I was going to say the V12 cars, yeah.
Whoa.
And it's very cool, and it's purple, and it's in his collection.
The motor's bigger than an Isetta.
Just a fact there. It is bigger than an Isetta. I'm bigger than an Isetta, and I'm not bigger than anything. So he's got that, and he got it like years ago. I forgot where, like a Barrett Jackson or a Mecum.
When nobody wanted him.
Yeah, and like well under $100,000. Maybe half. Maybe it's like 65 grand or 80 grand or something. And now they're starting to catch some attention, and I think it's Gooding, or no, it's RM, I think, has one going to Monterey this year. And it's the thing is like the XJ220 Jag, the Jag supercar from the 90s.
Yes.
That's a gorgeous car. I love that car. Years ago, I remember walking around the auction. You might have been with us at one of them. I'm there with Adam, and I'm like, XJ220 is where it's going. And those cars were $250,000, right? And now they're $500,000.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a $1 million car.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's a good-looking, crazy supercar. It's going to be a $1 million car.
The 80s and the 90s cars.
And it's like, it came out at a time where the Bugatti EB110 was there. And it's funny because they're both like 3.5 liter, right? But the EB110 is 3.5 liter quad turbo 12-cylinder. The Jag is twin turbo six cylinder, and now that the six cylinders are sort of becoming acceptable in the supercar world, that XJ220 is moving up. And look, that car was fast in its day. So I don't know. I kind of feel like this
in
Vector, yeah. And, you know, and it still looks crazy. I mean, wheels always get dated, right? You know this. You're in the wheel business. But
we built the wheels for those cars at Boyd's.
For the XJ?
No, for the
Bugatti.
The Vectors.
The Vectors.
We built all the wheels for the Vectors.
Yeah.
And that's funny because whenever I see one, I go, oh, yeah, we built those wheels.
Yeah, yeah. Which ones? The V8 cars or the V12 cars?
The V8 cars, and I think we did a few of the V12 cars. But you can always tell because they're bolt-together wheels, and they're just really basic. They have just like little V-cuts in them. They're super basic.
Is that what they wanted?
Yeah, because you know how his cars were real angular and real?
Yeah, yeah.
He just wanted a real angular V-cut wheel, and it was – And then it all exploded when he locked himself in his building. And
but I think the Vectors are going to be picking up, so I expect Ken Linkenfelder to have a good day in Monterey, just watching Vectors going, "Hey, yeah. I bought this car on accident."
Yep.
You know, somebody said, "Hey, this is not a bad way to spend $85,000 on a Tuesday morning at Barrett Jackson, you know, Connecticut or something." And he's like, "Okay."
Well, there's no Barrett Jackson, Connecticut.
Whatever.
There's one at Wonka Hills or whatever it is.
They used to have a Connecticut for like a minute.
I don't think, not that I ever remember.
Really?
But
they invited me to one.
You know what one of the big problems are with the 80s and 90s cars?
The mullets?
Well, you got to have a mullet to drive it. But no, the plastics. Because they used that agent where they become sticky.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
And like Ferraris of the 80s and 90s, huge problem, because I read this article about how even Ferrari's back stock has gone bad. So like you go, you know, Ferrari and go, "Hey, I want to buy that part, that knob, that what?"
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They're sticky. They're bad. And but what's saving it, the whole thing about the article, was that 3D printing is saving it, because now it's so easy to 3D print what it would have been like you were searching all over, or they were trying to come up with something they could coat them with, and, you know, but...
And if they have new old stock on the shelves of Ferrari, it's scanning and 3D printing is easier now.
Yes, and that's what some guy in Florida did, was he bought a whole bunch of stuff, scanned it, and what do you think happened?
He sold them all?
No, Ferrari got mad.
Sure they did.
Because they're going, "We didn't think of that." You know, I mean, so he's like, "What? I am creating my own version of a part. I'm not creating a Ferrari part," you know?
Yeah.
And it's, but the Ferrari people need them. They want them, you know, because they need that stuff. But every other 80s car is the same way. You know, I've had 80s cars, believe me. And you get in some of them I do. You're right. And
it's actually pretty easy to remove. I had it in a couple cars I've had. And I'm trying to remember what it was just. It's in all European cars, basically. It's in all of them. And it's like a satin finish rubber coating, and it's really thin. It starts to peel off, or it starts to get sticky. And I'm trying to remember.
They called it soft touch plastics, is what they called it.
Soft touch. But it's just a coating. So there's companies out there that will swap your parts out, especially with Ferrari and some of the more high-end cars, and they'll swap out all of your little soft touch pieces for pieces that have been cleaned and restored. But I read somewhere, and I'm trying to remember, I don't want to say it was acetone, I think that's too harsh, but it was something like wax and grease remover or alcohol, or it was actually something simple. It just took a long time to do, because you got to scrub on. No, it wasn't goof off. It wasn't oily, but it wasn't overly aggressive like acetone. But it might have been acetone, but it didn't disrupt the plastic underneath at all. And it just dissolved that stuff instantly. And, you know, it took a while, but I had it on the inside of the pockets, on the doors, and all of the switches, and it was horrible. It took me, I think, 2 days.
Yeah.
I did most of them in the car. But it's totally doable.
It's really strange how the plastics have been, we think plastic's been around forever, but you look back in the 70s, nothing was plastic. It was, you know, there were dashes and like that, but they were more like rubber and covered still back then. So the 80s and 90s, they were still developing them. And if you look at the 80s and 90s Corvettes, remember how the noses and the tails would discolor because they used a different paint and they would discolor.
Cadillac. Oh, yeah.
The big Cadillacs.
Big Cadillac, and like there's the back, the fin, and then
you've got
the
a big
plastic
gap.
Piece,
yeah.
And then the bumper is the rest of it. There's that gap.
It's when they had to have the collapsible bumpers. They put that expansion piece in there. And now you see them driving around where the chrome piece is there and nothing is between. But like my Grand National Buick, that car sat in my place over in Arizona for several summers in a warm warehouse, and the A-pillar covers and, you know, all that, they turned to dust. You could, like, touch them, and they would just turn to dust. And
actually, now that you mentioned it, the BMW, my M3 that I have, that Adam, it sat in the warehouse there, actually it was outside for like a little while covered, but just the heat.
Yeah.
You're right. All the A and B pillars in that car, it has kind of a like a headliner kind of material on it, but it's kind of one piece. It's glued on. It's not, you can't cover it.
Right.
And that all just fell apart and kind of turned to
dust.
Yeah,
disintegrates.
And
yeah,
you just got to buy all new panels. You know, you got to just buy new panels, which aren't cheap, about $550.
Right.
But
it's amazing.
So to Aaron's point, yes, you can scrape the stuff off and recoat it or just paint it or do whatever. But Ferrari owners don't want to do that.
Well, plus on some cars, you have indicators. There might be, you know, it might be a turning switch with like little dots or something on it.
Yeah.
And so you lose all of that. And it's, you know, it's something that it's weird. We thought plastics were going to be the greatest thing. And now you go back and now that's a whole different issue where when you go back farther, it was a different issue because metal parts were so hard to replicate that if you couldn't get them, you know, so there's always an issue with restoring cars and stuff. And Matt, while we're you had brought up Monterey and Goodwood and all that. While we're on that, I want to talk about something else that I read about. We've been talking a lot about new cars, a lot about Isettas and things like that. But I want to bring up something about hot rods because there's a guy in hot rodding that passed away. And a lot of people, if you're a hardcore hot rodder, you probably know the name Blackie Gigian. And Blackie was like just an institution in the world of hardcore hot rodding. And in recent, probably the last maybe 8 years, if you saw him at a show, he was always in one of those little, you know,
like
electric rascals. Yeah.
Shooters,
before that, though, he was always an I remember him. You know, being like an imposing figure because he was a real big guy, and he had this like I always called it Wolfman Jack hair.
The
beard and the hair all combed back, and totally looked like he was out of the 50s because he was, and he was from the era of the great builders, you know, the George Barris and the, you know, all those guys. But Blackie passed away, and one of the things that was interesting about Blackie was that he'd been involved in the America's Most Beautiful Roadster, you know, practically since its inception.
Back when it was the Oakland?
The Oakland Roadster Show, and they gave away the AMBR Award. He won it once, and it turned out that the year he won it, it was a tie. But he started out as a racer, and like a lot of guys that came back from World War II, it wasn't about how pretty your car was. It was how fast it was. And, you know, that's where hot rodding started. But he had a really bad accident. I think it was like 1947 or something like that at the Dry Lakes. Split his car in half. And he said, okay, I'm done racing.
He walked away from that.
Yeah.
Nice.
And he got into, you know, building cars, show cars.
Mm-hmm.
And the best story I ever heard about Blackie was that, you know how you, Aaron, you've been to car shows. You know how you go there and you see the mirrors under cars?
Yeah.
And that's like, okay, mirrors under cars, man. That's they've done that since, you know, the first wheel. Well, Blackie and his buddies were the ones who are coined with, like, being the guys who started that.
Yeah.
And the funny part of the story is that they had chromed everything under their car.
Yeah.
And they wanted to show it off. And I think it was the A la Carte, which is a famous hot rod from the past. And he built the chassis, and he had chromed everything. They got it there, and they're like, nobody can even see the chrome. And the funny thing is that this was like at the up in Oakland.
Yeah.
They went in the bathrooms and unscrewed the mirrors off the walls.
Oh.
And put them under the car. So they basically stole the mirrors.
Yeah, well, unless you put them back afterward. But what a great
idea.
And
put it under the car so people could see, and they won America's Most. And it's like, that's like hot rodding, man. That's
that
like, you know, hey, what can we do? Because I remember one time, and I'm pretty sure it's 7 years you can get in trouble for stuff. We had a when I was just a kid and first time I put my car in a show, me and a buddy, and we walked in and everybody had these nice displays and all this stuff. We just have our car sitting there on the cement. And I said, man, we need something to put around our cars. And this other guy had, like, you know, bark, you know, around his. And another guy had, you know, colored rock. And so we went out at like midnight and went to this business park that had just put in white rock, you know, like around their signs. And I didn't even think of it. I didn't think of it as like, you know, it's a business park. It's rock. And we scooped up the rock. The next morning, brought it and put it around our cars at the show, man.
What did you put it in?
I think a trash can. I think we scooped it into a trash can. And it was like, you know, and I look back at the photos now, and what's funny about it is I remember scooping rock for like an hour, and you look at the cars, and it's like, well, it's not even like the other guys had it like full, like the car was sitting on the rock. Ours is like got like 20 rocks.
It's like a ring, just like a little ring around.
Yeah, it's like.
Have you won AMBR?
With Boyd, we won it more times than anybody else, 5 times. Boyd had won it once before I was his business partner.
Yeah.
And then we won it 4 more times.
Did you use mirrors?
No, we didn't.
Yeah. What we won it 6 times.
By the time we won it, I know we could have. We put Mylar on the floor and, you know, so that you could see. No, by the time we did it, we did these really extravagant judging books where the judges could walk up and they could go page by page by page. And
that's smart.
Yeah. And it showed like the stuff that they wouldn't, you know, like, look, we did this to the nose of the car and showed the progression. We would shoot the car all the way through. And then now it's like regular. Everybody does it. But we did it and showed, you know, drawings of the car.
It's like a presentation book for it. Yeah.
Well, because a judge might walk up and not even know that the tail was, you know, pie cut 3 inches or whatever. But when you show them the metal work and then how it was, you know, finished and everything, and that way they can see the car, the way it started, the way it was worked on. They can see how it was developed, and then they see it in its final. It really, really made a big difference. But anyways, back to Blackie. He his collection is going to be sold at Mecum in Monterey, and that's what I was getting at.
And, oh, really?
And he was really unique because what he did was he built a collection of AMBR winners. So it's like, I think it's like 12 cars, and they're all cars that won America's Most Beautiful Roadster. Most of them are T-buckets and kind of unusual.
Yeah, early AMBR.
Real early AMBR stuff. But it's kind of cool, you know. So if you want to own a car that actually won America's Most Beautiful Roadster, you can go up there and selling everything in his collection except for his very first car that he won it with.
Yeah.
And
now it's just so competitive. Like, you go there and you see a Troy Trapani or even a Troy Ladd car. Like, these are
millions and millions of dollars
at least, you know, like, and Riddler cars are, I mean, it's gotta be $1 million just to,
it's just a million. Just even think about
just,
it. Yeah.
Just think about
and,
it. And these aren't, you flip these things in a year. Like, these things take 4 or 5 years to build. $1 million in 5 years. It's like, it's getting a little,
it used to be the old ones were, how much chrome did you put on them? And how nice was the paint? And, you know, I mean, well, like one of
Now if you're not spending $100,000 on paint, on a paint job, you're not going to win.
From taking cars there to compete, it's amazing because I mean the judges, they have like magnifying glasses and lights because it is so competitive. Those judges have a really hard time. They've got to. If you got two cars that are just at the top of their game, how do you choose?
Yeah.
So they start looking like I remember on a car we built, they would open the door, take a flashlight and a magnifying glass and look in where the hinge went and disappeared into the door to judge if it was color sanded and if the bolts were chrome inside where you never could see them, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, that's like what's nuts because it's crazy, but anyways, one of the pioneers of hot rodding, he's gone, but the cars will get dispersed and they'll live on around, and I mean, you know, that's what's cool about Monterey. So much going on. The other thing about Monterey this year, you and I talked about it briefly once, is that there's no mark out at the racetrack this year. It's normally like Chevy or whatever. They're celebrating 50 years of IMSA.
Yeah.
Do you know anybody taking a car up there?
I do. I know.
You do?
I do know.
An acquaintance?
Yeah. we're actually going to be bringing up the Porsche 935 again, now that it's been up on the frame rack. And,
yeah.
And we talked on the story here, but I don't know if we ever sort of finished it. So if you're not a regular CarCast listener, Adam Carolla's Paul Newman Porsche 935, when we took it to Rennsport, it wasn't going straight. And
it's because Matt backed it off of the trailer ramp when they were unloading it. But we won't bring that up.
I was drunk in the Walmart parking lot.
Yeah, I was doing donuts.
The way that car was set up, the alignment was really weird. So the driver's side front wheel was pulled back like 2 inches, just at the very limit of the adjustability of the control arms and everything. And the front one was pushed forward. And it looked weird, like when you get on one side of the car, you see the wheel opening. And
it's right centered
it's like,
or something.
It's like it's so far back. And
that's because they were using it for stock car racing and for then, a few years.
Yeah, so it looked weird. And the guy in our shop over there, Sean, he kind of straightened it up. And then Adam drove it, and he's like, this thing darts over to the sides. We're like, something's messed up. So he did a few laps and stuff in it, and then he kind of brought it in. We're like, we'll try to skew it again, put it back and make it look weird and see if it goes straight. And it kind of did, but then he just didn't feel comfortable with the way it was driving. So we came back, Sean made a frame table, put the car on there, and just got pickup points all off the car. That it doesn't have a full frame. There's it's a race car. You know, you don't know what the pickup points are going to be. And usually you would use control arm mounting points as pickup points, but you can't because we think that's the problem. Right. So he just did them from all different places on in the car, and he ended up doing like 6 of them or 8 of them. That way there's a lot of, you know, sort of fail safes and stuff. And I'm like, look, this car already is like, this isn't a bent chassis issue. I was like, I don't think it's.
Are you sure? Did you pull the Carfax report to see if it had ever been in a collision on that side?
Yeah, we did pull the Carfax report. And
they should have a race fax. Like, yes, it hit the wall at Monterey in 1986.
Yeah, sure, yeah. And they should have the website just for that. They should add that to that Racing Sports Cars website. Anyway, we got it up on the rack and took it all apart. And it's also a good time to like clean everything, pull the fenders off and all that stuff. And I was like, it's too far off to be bent, right? Because if you try to put this on a table and straighten it, the windshield would pop out. The doors wouldn't close.
It was like, that far
like,
off.
Like, it wouldn't work. So what we did find is once we really like pulled, we took the fuel cell out of the front. We took that cross brace off the front. We took the fenders off. And the front half of the car was changed. It was welded. It was stitched welded on. And it was in front. So the shocks on this, the front suspension on this is a little bit like a McPherson strut, right? It's got the shock coilover with a mount on the top with like a cast or camber plate. And
did
then
they weld it in 2 different places?
And then it went down below. It had like an A-arm style, like control arm. So where the shocks were mounted were factory, and the stitch was just in front of it, toward the front of the car. But it ended up cutting off where the stitch was part of the lower control arm mounts. And when they stitched that whole front end on, it was stitched on crooked.
Yeah, they cut it maybe a fraction on this side, and so it was always canted.
Yeah, it was.
Wow.
That's exactly it.
That sounds like a fix at a racetrack.
Yeah.
Like it got... You know, we got to get it back out there.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And then over the years, like somebody else did some restoration stuff. So it got sanded down, it got painted and whatever. And you kind of got to dig through it to see the stitch.
Right.
You'd have to take the fenders off to see it because when you open the hood, you can't see the stitch. Because that's a part of the car you see. They did more work to make it look good in there. You got to really get underneath it. So what we did was we just left the top mounts where the way they were. We didn't cut the front off because the bodywork all fits perfectly. And then just the lower control arm mounts, cut the lower control arm mounts, moved them, squared them up, put it back together, and now it's dead on nuts straight. Based on all the pickup points. So hopefully that car is going to...
I would have replaced the whole back of the car and straightened it that way.
Yeah. Well, not that the back is good either, but yeah. You know, I keep thinking of like the big like a C-130 military plane. They're so big with all the engines out that, like, I flew on one before through Air Force ROTC stuff and all and whatnot, and they can't really, like, land straight. They're just too big. So the plane can be skewed a little bit, like pointing left or right, but then all the wheels will point forward.
Right.
So you can kind of land it on an angle, do that. I was like, that's kind of like, you know, Adam driving it, it's like, it's like 4 inches turned to
you're,
the right.
You're saying it's like that pickup truck you see going down the road that's dog-legging all the way down the road?
Yeah. It's kind of like that.
We saw one when we were driving back from Texas. It was like I forget what it was. It was like a Snap-on truck or something. It was like a fully legit, you know, service truck. It was totally not even 0.45 degrees, but I mean it was diagonal on the road, and the kid's got his arm hanging out the window in his little work right. uniform. I'm looking at my wife and I'm like, really? Like, that's like a service vehicle. It's not like some dude's homemade pickup, you know. It's like, you know, where they botched the frame up. It's like, this is like a full-on business. And I'm thinking, what the hell?
What state were you in?
The whole act was just shifted to the side.
Where were you, Texas. New Mexico? Oh, Texas? Okay.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, because you see the weirdest stuff. The farther you get from town, it's like, yeah, nobody's going to know. I'll just drive it. You know, it's like.
I hope it was a Snap-on truck, because the guy's rolling around with a $500,000 tools going,
exactly.
How do I fix this thing?
Yeah, how do I fix it? I wish I knew somebody at a body shop or something. Yeah.
If I could go to any one of my customers ever.
Well, just to wrap up on Monterey, the Historics, they already have, well, they've capped it, 500-plus cars in the field this year.
Right. So they've always been capping at about 550, but they've been getting 1,000, now like 1,100-plus submissions every year.
And
so you can't just get a good vintage car and race it. Like, you've got a selection
committee. It's got to have something, some heritage. Like we said, they're celebrating IMSA's 50th, so that's going to mean that you're going to see lots of cool Greenwood Corvettes, 935 Porsches. They got a Trans Am class again. Chevy Monzas, like that one, that red one that's always there.
That's the G-Con spanking, Monza.
Spanking all the Porsches, man. That guy's been doing that for years, and it's an old factory race car.
And it's so cool. Loud. I don't know, he's got a big block? Something.
What those motors are that were in those is... They called them Porcupine V6s. So they were basically a big block Chevy with two of the cylinders cut off.
Because it sounds meaty.
It's neat.
It's got like a big, like low, deep, kind of big block sound.
I always wanted one of those motors. Yeah. I looked for them for years, and they're super hard to find because they're like a miniature big block Chevy, and they're just so cool.
And we saw that guy running so hard a couple of years ago. It was that Decon Monza, one of the two, I think it was the red one, where he's coming through the turn, like right last turn before you go under the small bridge with the mile an hour above it.
Yeah.
And his wheel sheared off.
So the hub
of the wheel, the center section, was still bolted to the car, and then whatever the five spokes or six spokes, they all snapped. And this tire was a rear,
and they're giant tires on that Monza.
Giant, and I'm telling you, like you roll them around the shop and you bounce them a little bit, but at that speed, these things fly. This thing bounced and it just took off. And actually, I was sitting, I think we were sitting in the audience for that one. Or maybe Bodie Stroud was there that year. And the guys at the grandstands were just like, there's this tire, like 12-inch wide, 13-inch wide tire.
Yeah, huge.
With just machete blades of sheared off, you know, aluminum in the middle coming at them. And this was years ago when those grandstands weren't quite as full, which was good.
Yeah.
This thing just bounced and, like, flew over and landed in the grandstand. I was like, man, that's crazy. If it wasn't, I don't know, 12, 14 inches wide or whatever,
They're huge. They look like a shorter funny car slick. I mean, they're giant tires under that.
This thing shot off. I'm like, what happened? And then you could see on the car, it's still bolted on there. Like, that's maybe that's a real magnesium wheel that's got a few too many miles on
it.
I don't know if it was a straight up like BBS, like basket weave, but it's funny. We have a shop over there. It
could have been a Goatee wheel. They use Goatee wheels on those. Yeah.
Is it Goaty or Gotti?
I call him Goaty.
Yeah.
Gotti's a little too...
Mafiesque?
Mafiesco,
A little too mafiesque.
A little too mafia.
We've got a bunch of, like, all these race cars, right? We've got a bunch of them over there with... And we just... have racks and racks hanging on the building of the original wheels because you can't run any of them. You can send them out and get them like Magnafluxed, and they do the dye to find the cracks and all
like
that stuff.
They do on aircraft parts.
But we still don't really race on them because you just go get like a modern set of PBS. Plus, a lot of times you can't get the right tire size anymore.
Exactly.
Right? So the 935 originally had like 18s and 19s on it, and you can't get it. So some guys run 16s all around. And we have a set of 18s on it right now as well. You get the with just a modern day PBS center, but you know we have the original wheel set up there with the fans and everything on it. But you can't. I'm telling you, don't skimp on the wheels, man. Ask that guy in the Monza.
Yeah, because well, not only could somebody get hurt, but those cars could get wiped out forever because of one wheel breaking. You know
that car is expensive. You could have hit three other 935s or something out like all those guys and that driver. I mean, that guy was great behind the wheel, and he, you know, it probably a little better was the rear wheel than a front wheel on that one.
It's so funny when you go there for the first time and you're with somebody that's there for the first time, and they're like, "What is that red car that's beating everybody?" And it's that's a Chevy Monza. And they're like, "What?" Because it doesn't look like a Chevy Monza. Look it up online. You decomp Monterey and.
It's a Decon.
Yeah, Decon, excuse me.
And Decon Monza.
Because this thing has a huge rear wing. It's got the big box flares on it. It is just so badass. It's so cool.
And it kicks ass out there.
There was a guy at the Street Machine Nationals back in the 80s, and I had a Monza. Actually, Charlotte had one, and it was bright red. It was a Monza 2+2, the really just like that one is, and it was bright red. And we had lowered it and put center lines on it, and drove it to the Street Machine Nationals one year because my car wasn't done, and I wanted to put a whale tail because they made a whale. It looked exactly like a 930 like a Porsche whale tail with the rubber around it and everything, and. I pulled into the Street Machine Nationals, and there was a guy that had a black Monza with a whale tail, and he had a turbocharged V8 in it, and the car was just so bad. It had gold BBS wheels on it, and I was just like, oh, man. And then there was another guy who had built one that had the box IMSA flares on it, and I was so jealous because that thing – I thought ours looked really cool, lowered with center lines. Those things were cool.
I could just see Charlotte coming home from work one day, and you got that car all cut up in the garage. I'm fixing it, Charlotte. Don't worry.
Yeah, I got it handled.
It's fine.
You know what it didn't have, though?
Continental
it didn't have
belts?
Serpentine belts on it.
It didn't have serpentine belts?
Serpentine.
It didn't have Continental belts?
Nope.
Well, listen, I'm going to tell you about Continental belts. If you guys think of all the weird things that you
find it had weird
cars,
stuff in the car?
It did.
One time, I'll tell you a weird stuff in the car story to lead into this.
Yeah.
We were living in Arizona, and people would cut through our neighborhood on the way back from the river when they'd go tubing or boating or whatever. And one day she came running in the house screaming because she left the windows down because it was so hot. Somebody had a fish, and as they drove by, they threw it, and it hit the pillar and split in half. And as she opened, there was a fish head looking at her and fish guts everywhere.
Oh.
So that's weird stuff in your car.
Talking about mafia-esque.
And when it's like 110 degrees, it took a while for that smell to get out of there.
Did you just sell the car? Or?
No, we sprayed vanilla scent in it, so then she had vanilla fish scent.
Right. You know why? Because Brad doesn't sell anything.
I wrecked it. That's how I got rid of it.
You wrecked it? Oh, ouch. Well, listen, if you think of all the weird things that you find in cars, I guess fish is one of them. It's really kind of the stuff that makes you wonder about folks. Well, another thing that'll make you wonder, but in a good way, are Continental belts. They're better than fish. I bet you didn't know that they're OE in tens of millions of Chrysler, Dodge, Ford, and GM vehicles that roll off the assembly line. They're also OE in a majority of BMWs and VWs. And Continental has now launched the Multi-V belt with their OE pedigree. It's their OE technology series of belts. These belts are fanatically engineered for perfect fit, form, and function. And Continental has an OE technology series Multi-V belt for 98% of the vehicles on the road in the U.S. and Canada. So listen, guys, you get enough surprises working on your cars and trucks already. A belt shouldn't be one of them. Go with the Continental OE Technology Series Multi-V Belt, the belt with the OE pedigree. To get the full story, visit oetechnologyseries.com.
So not to make the show the Isetta talk hour, but we know that last episode we talked about the trip back. So what have you found since you've tore those things apart? I saw that you did a lot of cleaning and color sanding, it looks like.
Yeah, well, we didn't even have to color sand them. I just took a red Scotch-Brite and with some water outside, because, you know, they've been sitting outside for 50 years. I figured, what's a little more water going to hurt? And we scrubbed yeah, right. And we scrubbed them down. And I got to say, man, there's some good stuff up there. Now, you know, I like patina, so I'm going to I'm gonna try to leave the patina for now, right? But the one of them's a Cabriolet, and it's actually in the best shape. And
wait, like it came that way or the roof rusted away?
The roof fell off on the trip back. Yeah. Now it's Cabriolet.
It was a Cuba we left Texas and we got home and the roof was missing.
We went to lift it.
The whole roof quarter is just corroded. So it's not a Cabriolet. You know, all the framework's there, everything's there. It had some Kansas left on it. But that's the most valuable one of the lot. It's worth almost as much as the other two combined. And there's so much paint left on that car and very, very little of rust. There's just a few, you know, spots in the floors and the right front fender, which is really typical consistent on all three. But there's tons of red paint. And so when I took the lights off and the little indicators, there's perfect paint underneath it. Hmm. And it looks like single stage, doesn't look like there's any clear. And so I'd scrub around that area to see how close I could get it to the original paint. And no joke, you almost can't see a parting line. All that paint scrubbed out so nice. And when it was wet, it looks like it would be when it's clear coated.
I saw the photo you put up where it was wet. And it looked like it was.
Right?
Yeah. It looked cool.
It looked almost like a new paint job from that angle. Now, there's some paint missing on the left quarter and on the left. Mid panels and on the right mid panel towards the rear wheel, and then of course on the very top of the it's all that dark rusty red, which is really cool. And then on the very back, there's some paint missing, some burning on the top. But I'm thinking that's cool character, and it's only like that once in its lifetime, you know, because it's been sitting out so long. So I thought, well, let's prep it. You know, I talked to Craig Frazier from House of Color and my friend Mike as well. And I said, hey, what can I use with this? They're like, use a good adhesion promoter, you know, UC71 or whatever it was, and then use this high solids clear, and you should be good. So I'm going to prep it. I'm going to clear coat them. And that way down the road, you know, I can always repaint them. But, I mean, for now, I think it's going to be cool because we're going to do the interior mint, you know, all the new chrome, new top, new powertrain, restore the frame, all the wiring, all the mechanics, but then leave this cool patina body on top. I think it's going to be pretty cool. I'm excited.
Cool.
Are you working on three of them at once, or are you going to pick one car and try to put that together and then figure out the rest?
Well, I have one car that's in pretty rough shape. The floor is almost completely rotted out. There was tons of stuff in it, including leaves and parts, so I couldn't see the bottom as well, and it was in tall grass. So when I pulled all that out, if they would have all three been that way, I probably would have passed. But it's just the one, and I thought, okay, I'll start on this one, and I'll find out where everything is and how bad everything is, learn on this one, because it's the most perished, and then apply that to the other one. So I'm kind of working on all three at the same time, but leaving one intact so that I can refer back to it, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's hard not to, because they're all in kind of the same but different condition. So it's like I'll try something on one and then apply it to the other. It's hard to just leave the others alone. I mean, it's like I want to go there and clear coat it now without doing all the – I'm going to do all the dent work and push them all out by hand.
You need to do it that one that doesn't have a floor or anything? I was thinking about this. You need to build
– Smart car.
Nope. Better than that. You need to take and build a little, you know, like a square – you know, frame underneath it, and then mount it on the an old arcade horse up and down thing, and just have it outside your house or in your garage, where you just get in it and it just kind of goes, and you put another nickel in it.
We were going to make a love seat in the living room. Worst case scenario, I was going to put it on a rectangular frame with just rollers underneath and just the wheels sitting there, upholster the interior, hang the door on the wall, no glass, finish it all out, and then upholster the seat as a love seat. Put it in the living room instead of the TV. Worst case scenario.
What?
but I did find a vintage Pepsi light can in there, and we figured it was from the late 70s. We've kind of narrowed it between like 76 and 78. I guess it came
out
with this.
Did you send it out for a clear coat?
He clear coated it right away.
No, I just put it on the shelf.
Of the other relics. What years are the three Isettas?
Well, I have a title on one that's a 57 and a bill of sale on the others. So I'm not sure on the others, but
they're all mid 50s, aren't they?
So 57 is the BMW version, not the Italian version.
Yes, exactly. So I think these are going to be 57 to 60 is my guess. The one plate has 54 on it. But I'm guessing late 50s to early 60s. But I'll find out. All I got to do is just turn in the VINs and research those. I just haven't done it. It hasn't been a concern.
What if they come back as stolen in 1963?
Well, I'll deal with that if that's the case.
I still think you got to make one of them a hot rod. Like, one of them needs like a BMW motorcycle engine. I mean, these things had 13 horsepower, and if you put like 100 horsepower BMW motorcycle engine in it,
I'd rather see it as an arcade ride where you just
Well, the thing is the, you know, the one is so valuable. And then the other one is called a Tropical. It has the little vents in the nose, and it's a deluxe. It has the rack on the back, and it has all the trim and the aluminum trim around the edges, and then the other trim around the windows. So it's kind of a deluxe version. So I'll probably leave those stock. But like I said, the one that's the most perished also doesn't have a complete motor. I only have the top half of the motor. So the seat frame was totally perished on that one. And so, yeah, I'm looking at a couple of actually have some stuff up on the screen right now. So I'm thinking smart cars, real similar dimensions. And didn't I mention all this in the last
Yeah, that we talked about on the last show. Yeah.
So I talked about that as a possible hot rod because I want to leave the front end rather stock, and the smart car has disc brakes, everything all compact in the rear end. But I'm also looking at some of those buggies, some of those, you know, 400, 500, 600 cc buggies, because those are pretty compact. The wheelbase, the width in the back is pretty compact, and they're kind of self-contained. I'm looking for stuff, you know, I'm not an engineer. I don't want to overbuild this thing with a custom tube chassis and all this. I just kind of want to convert it lightly to where you almost can't tell except for the rear wheelbase and maybe the wheels themselves. And so I'm looking at some alternatives, something that's kind of already inset and compact and built that I can kind of adapt and blend the two and get them to work using the original front end. So there is some options out there. And if it's registered to the Isetta and, you know, I've got 600 cc's back there, you know, with kind of low gears for a buggy, you know, because we really don't want this thing going over 65 miles per hour. That's pretty sketchy in those cars.
It's about the sound, like, because we talked about the
big extractor pipe sticking out the back
engine in it. But you got to find
the old stinger.
I don't know if you've seen this. You got to find this video. There was a Model A Ford that somebody built up a while back. There was a YouTube video about 10 years ago, and they did this crazy restoration on it to make it look as authentic as possible. It had like wooden wheels and everything, but the wooden wheels were all custom made billet pieces with all like hand painted to make it wood. And then what was great was it had a Cosworth engine in it, and it sounded like an F1 car, but he did something in there.
God.
And I forgot what he did in there, but he had a lever or a button in there that kind of like misfired the engine, kind of like the way the Harley gets a unique sound. with the ignition system on Harley Davidson. He had that. So this thing would putt around and it would sound like an old timey, like Model A, slow pop, 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 pop. And then he'd flip a switch and it would just turn into like this F1 race car. Wah, wah, wah. And the thing would go flying down the road.
You talked about that a while back.
It would just go flying down the road.
We talked about this. That's so cool.
And I got to find the video for it. I'm going to find the video. I'm going to post it up somewhere. I'll put it up on Shift and Steer or something. But, and they made a YouTube video, and they did it cool because they did, like, you know, when they made the video, when it was putting around and it's like its old-timey version, they kind of put a filter on the video to make it look like it was old.
I think you sent me that.
It was 10 or 12 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a while.
This Model A with the Cosworth engine and he had like the two modes to it, so he can.
It was really cool
because we talked about it, I think, in the past, because he did like billet wheels, but they were all painted to look wood and everything. Yeah, so very, very, very cool. And I just keep picturing your Isetta as one of those where you're like, you pull up and it sounds, you know, like you're like, what is that? And then it's like, oh, that's a 1200 cc BMW whatever engine in it, and it just sounds like a little maniac. It's not about doing 100 miles an hour in this thing. It's about just making it sound like something insane.
That's what you could call it. Little Maniac.
Yeah, Little Maniac.
So it's this one. It's a 29 Model A with a 250 horsepower Cosworth rally engine.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it's really a cool video.
That's it.
Yeah, we're going to have to post that somewhere. We're going to post that up there somewhere.
So Matt, we're running to the end of the show. What were you driving last week? Is that what you wanted to talk about, what you were driving last week?
We did do many trips. Everybody did trips. So we're running out of time. I will tell you this. I went to Portland and did a trip with Ford for the new Ford Explorers, the 2020 Ford Explorers. I got into some of those details on the shows, the CarCast shows this past week, both episodes. And maybe next week I do want to talk a little bit about this Infiniti Q60 Red Sport 400. And you came out, Brad, and
yeah,
took
checked
a look
it
at
out.
It's
a nice car.
Great looking coupe. We'll get into that. But the Ford Explorer experience was fantastic. And they have, you know, different media, different journalists come in for like a day at a time. And I had never been to Portland, which I don't know why, but I haven't. And
you going
so,
back?
So I turned it into, it was really nice. I mean, everything was, the weather was great. So I kind of turned it into more of a weekend with a friend, and we flew up there. We went right out to this lodge, you know, about 45 minutes outside of Portland. And it was, you know, it was gorgeous out there.
Portlandia.
And they have a whole off-road course set up. So they're like, here's the car. And it's like at the all-wheel drive mode. It's got hill descent. It's got all this. So you could just put the hill descent and just take your feet off the pedals and it just goes down. And then you can go up the hill and you go up on an angle. And there's meters in the car in the factory dash. You can do everything on the dash now. And it's like, what angle are you at? You're like 27 degrees.
You're
angle.
Rolling over.
Yeah. And then you're like, you can go through water and they have like water set up with little rocks underneath and you can feel it trying to get traction underneath. So we drove, they have a couple different configurations. I want to say four versions of it. They have a base model. It's a 2.3 liter EcoBoost four cylinder. Off the top of my head, I want to say that's 300 horsepower. They have a hybrid, which is a V6 gas engine with an electric motor. It's not a turbo gas engine. It's naturally aspirated electric motor, combined 318 horsepower. Ford did a great job of designing everything on that, just like the others, in that the battery is tucked up high underneath, like the gas tank would be. It's shielded. It's completely sealed. You can go into water. You can do the off-road. You can do everything in the hybrid. The next step would be the, I think it's the 3-liter V6, 365 horsepower turbo engine. And then the Explorer ST is that engine with 400 horsepower. And the ST is kind of the sportier version of it. So this is a 200-inch, 199-inch, three-row, seven-passenger SUV. And I kept talking to the guys, like, oh, I towed a trailer. I did the off-road course.
You went through the alpaca obstacle course,
I did.
Right?
We went to the alpaca farm and photographed with alpacas. They spit.
they spit. Yes.
They will spit on you. But they were great.
Get spat upon by an alpaca?
No. Sometimes they get mad at each other and spit on each other. It's like, oh, it's all weird. But the woman who runs it was
what
fantastic.
Animals?
And she's like, I saw Ford's running around and like, yeah. And, you know, my friend knew about the alpaca farm. She's like, oh, we'll bring the truck over and I'll get all the girls to come over. And it's all there's the boy alpacas and then mm-hmm. all the girls are over there in another area. They're all like knocked up, by the way. There's like six of them pregnant in there. And the guys are just walking around all cocky.
The guys
cocky,
are all like, yeah.
All cocky and stuff. And
and Ford's using real alpaca seat covers, right?
God, that would be weird. You don't have to kill the alpaca and skin it. You just shave
well,
the hair.
Well, to skin it, but
the
to shave
hair.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
Skinning and shaving are two different things.
This is like if they were going to, you know, sew it up or something or whatnot. So she's like, oh, move the truck over, and then I'll get the feed out, and they'll all come over. And so I got some great photos of just like all the alpacas staring at the vehicle going, why is this here?
Yeah.
What's it doing in our area? It was fun. The ST is kind of badass. It's got like 21-inch rims and the bigger brakes, and you know the steering it's got better feedback on it. It's 400 horsepower. I mean, it's not meant. I would say the closest competitor would be a Dodge Durango SRT.
Okay,
and it's 400 horsepower versus the Durango's like 475. I think the Durango, I'm sure, is quicker. The Ford had this great balance of...
Have they restyled it greatly, or is it...
It's not a big restyle, but everything kind of just worked. You get in it. There's two different screens. There's a small screen and the big screen, depending on the options. If you get
you
the
like
SD
that.
Or the whatever.
Matt likes the dual screen.
And well, it's not a dual screen. You can either get the small screen in the base model or the bigger for the other
okay.
As the upgrade, but both of them work great. And you don't necessarily need the big one, but... It's a cool option. It just looks interesting. It's like a bigger iPad up there.
I tell everybody that at the gym. Yeah, you don't need big muscles.
That's right.
No, that's all overrated.
No. It's all that's yeah. right. But it, you know, you plug it up and it's got CarPlay, and then if let's say you're just gonna run out quick or something, you don't want to plug in your phone, there's a charging pad like right near the center console. Just
a lot of the new cars have charging
and
pads.
The new iPhones have it, even with the case on my iPhone. I just threw it there, boom, started charging. You
my
know.
iPhone 3 didn't work on it.
No, it didn't
I
work on it.
I didn't understand
yeah.
that. No, but,
but
you know what?
It was
as a fact, though, I've got the iPhone 10, and I was afraid that with the cover it wouldn't work.
Yeah.
One car did, one car didn't. The newer cars, yeah. they've got that figured out. Set it on, starts charging right away.
Yeah, and I think some of the charging pads, some need to be a little bit stronger than others. Also,
yeah.
the charging pads don't seem to charge as quickly as plugging in. But it's still...
I did read an article on conspiracytheory.com that those charging pads, they download all your information and send it to the government.
Yeah, I'm not even going to get into that, but that commercial with the two phones were like, oh, you can just charge it off your friend's phone. I was like,
yeah.
if there was a better way to steal data, that's
exactly,
it. Like, oh my
exactly.
gosh.
Yeah, just let me access your phone. I'll charge
can
it
I charge
for
my
you?
Phone by putting it on your phone? Yeah. Oh, thank you. It's just like, why does every time you charge your phone, it pops in and says memory is full?
Yeah exactly. why are you posting my photos? Where did you get them?
It's so we got this, you know, this 40-something 100-pound SUV, 7-passenger, and the engineer I was talking to at Ford, and he kept talking about track. He's like, track. I was like, I get the ST is sporty and it's 400 horsepower, but you keep saying track like we're going to take it out there and track it. He's like, we do. And he goes, I go, what do you do? He's like, honestly, he's like, we just change the brake pads. Like, we do a track pad on it. And he goes, it's actually pretty good.
Wow.
So I was like, give me the ST. I'm hitting the mountains. I'm hitting the canyons. And it seemed good. It seemed kind of fun. Of course, it's a EcoBoost engine, right? So it's 400 horsepower.
Yeah.
For $500, you're a handheld tuner and a cat-back exhaust away from probably 480 horsepower.
Exactly.
Bag, you know, and, you know.
And my mom had an Explorer, a mid-sized one like that. And I think hers was, I don't know, I'm going to say 93 or something. I think it had like 150 horsepower motor or something. I mean, they've come a long way.
I had a 93 Ford Explorer red, two-door, five-speed manual.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's living, man.
Yeah.
And that's when they were...
Yeah. Man, I would throw this thing around all over. Anyway, the Ford Explorer seemed great. It's a very important cool. vehicle for Ford. It kind of created the SUV category. They expect to sell a lot.
I'm sorry, but Land Rover will totally disagree with you on that.
Did Land Rover have... body on frame, or was it unibody? Because I think that's what they were going for here.
It's body on frame.
Yeah, I think it's, yeah.
Aaron doesn't have body on frame on those Isettas either, so.
No, it doesn't have body on body.
He's got rust on body.
Frame. Yeah, rust on body.
Rust on body.
Hey, we got to wrap it up, guys.
Anyway, it was a good event, and then we went to Portland and drove around there and went to the city.
Cool, so you're driving that. I've got a new Evoque coming my way to drive.
Ooh, so do I.
Yeah. And
so, for like a month or two. Oh, I just went to a Volvo event and reconnected with them. So the first time in my 10 years of doing this business, I'll be driving the Volvo.
Wow. The new Volvos are good-looking cars.
I'm going to start with the S60 sedan, and then I think I'm going to get try to get one of those SUVs because I keep hearing a lot of good XC.
And they've got X. They all say they're XC, but
XC? You know,
I don't know. We'll have to check it out.
Anyway, that's that. I'm done. Done here.
All right, everybody. So we'll be back again next week. What's that?
I was going to say, remind me to tell you about a couple of cars I went to see in a restoration shop while in Texas. We'll save that for the next show.
Okay. Something that could have been said off the air. Hey,
we jumped right in today.
I know we did. Hey, everybody. Matt's going to tell you where you can find us online so you can go see our photo galleries, videos, all that kind of stuff.
Definitely. Go to shiftandsteer.com and all of our social medias. Is Shift Steer Media, and Brad's getting a call, so the show is over.
We almost made it through the whole show. Can you believe that? Without us, and I've got it. Now, see this. I've got it on Do Not Disturb, and I'm still getting calls. So
also could have been saved for off the
riddle
air.
Riddle me that. Exactly.
All right.
So, hey, you can find me, Brad, at Bradley_Fanshaw or Photos by Fanshaw on Instagram. Everywhere else, Brad Fanshaw. Aaron, where can they find you? And all those great photos that you're putting up of the Isetta restoration.
You can find me anywhere online under Aaron Hagar and also The Rat Runner's Garage is my website.
Yeah, you can find me at Motorator if you want to see pictures of alpacas.
Of alpacas. Yeah. Don't you have one? I like the one where you're jumping the 10 alpacas in the Ford Explorer.
There's
that's
some
pretty
dangerous
cool.
stuff going on.
But that's what happens up in Portland.
Oh, and I went by some park, and there was a train there, and it was like a museum display, and I loved it. So I figured out a way to get the Explorer not legally in front of the train.
He just pulled up on the lawn.
It required a little bit of the off-roading version of
it. Well, that's what it's for. Yeah. And when anybody stops, you just go, I'm a professional. I'm doing this for Ford.
Getting to in front of the train looked shady as hell, but once the car was there, it looked like it was supposed to be there.
Like you were shooting something.
Yeah, you were shooting something. And people were like, oh, is this like a mall display? I mean, there's a Bentley in the Grove inside the, I was like, what? Why wouldn't there be an Explorer in front of a train? So I got to post
that's what you do next. Take the Infiniti and park it in the Grove. And when you're pulling in, security's trying to stop you, go, it's a display. It's a short-term display.
Every time they give you these, they got the window sticker. They got the Monroney. Just throw that in the front window. People think it's a display.
Then they go, wow. then Infiniti will get a big bill from the Grove, and they'll be like, what is this for? Well, the display that you had there for 15 minutes, that's $150,000.
Right.
So,
hey, guys, before we wrap up, though, I'm going to tell you about Steve Austin. His show is back. The Steve Austin Show is back and better than ever with new exciting episodes featuring tales from his new life. An unbelievable past adventures. He talks about he talks to his pro wrestling pals, pretty much everything. Steve is great. We love Steve Austin. He's a neighbor of mine, and he's buying more cars. He bought his Corvette, and he's got his vintage truck, so maybe we'll even get him on this show at some point. So check out the Steve Austin Show on Podcast One or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. All right, wrap it up.
This is it. Shift and Steer, we're out of here. So, thanks, everybody.
See ya.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.